Hey, I'm Dina Blizzard, and you're watching One Funny Morning.
Welcome to One Funny Morning Show.
From Monday to Friday.
And sometimes on Saturday.
Why would you say that in front of all these people?
You never know what's going to happen.
Carmen.
Cortez.
Good morning, everybody.
What's outside your weather drawer?
Good morning!
Uppy, uppy.
Uppy, everybody. Good morning. Something's off with this. I'm not sure what. Well, anyways, it's Lucy again, Peterborough, Ontario. As you know, we could check and see if Jason Momoa is here. Nope, no Jason, not yet. But where you see that blue tarp, we'll have a pool and Jason will be back. Anyways, you're watching One Funny Mother. Take it away, Dina.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, everybody from somewhat sunny, cloudy Dayton, Ohio. We made it. Good morning, Jeremy. Good morning, Bougie. How are you? We made it. Yesterday was a big day of travel and trying to get to Dayton, Ohio via 2:30 in the morning, via Washington, D.C., via a morning show, then finally getting here and doing show last night. Good morning. Hola to all of my bilingual sisters. That didn't sound very authentic, my hola. Carly, thanks so much. We had a great time last night. So I have so many stories to tell you in trying to get here. It's is it sunny in New Jersey? Of course it is. As soon as I leave, Allison, it became beautiful. Did I get some sleep? Kind of missy. I had bourbon and that tucked me in last night. It was like, girl, go to sleep. So are you closed? I have so many white closets. Yeah, yeah. This is where we ended up in a very, look, I asked them specifically. I was like, would you be able to add some dirty trays in the back? And they said, we'll see if we can accommodate that request. And they did. And so here we are. No, Kimberly, it's so close. With the new morning show open. Yeah, I'm as close to being on time as I'm going to get. Good morning, TikTok. How are you? We are in Dayton, Ohio. So a couple of things. I'm sorry. I'm still getting used to the air here in Dayton. It's the same. Came out this week for the Irma Bombeck Writing Conference, which launches tonight all the way through to Saturday. It is a conference that I have been trying to get to for probably 10 years, probably longer. The conference talks all things Irma, and it's all women, and I guess like five guys, because I said, do any guys come? They're like, there's a couple fellas that come. I would say majority women who are writers, who are either already writing humor, looking to write about humor, finding a great community. They celebrate all things Irma. This was her alma mater. You're going to do the online version? Miss, I'll see you. Look for me in the back. All the way, you're not going to see me. I'm going to be nowhere that you're going to be able to see me, but I'll call you. So it'll be like you're here. The conference only happens every other year. And it's always on my radar. And then by the time it sells out in a minute. So this year, Unfiltered Kathy is with me. Laurie Needs a Nap is with me. Julie Cantrell from Story Summit, who we love. She's going to be doing sessions here. Leanne Lord, a fellow comedian who I was with last night, is hosting it. Jane Condon, another amazing comedian, is here teaching the stand-up workshop and hosting the stand-up comedy night on Saturday. There is an online version. You might still be able to participate if it's something that you think you'd like to do. It is such a just a pleasure to be here. And so when we booked it and we knew that we were coming. We decided to do a Dine with Dina, which we're doing today at noon. And then we did the comedy show last night. And so, so it's been great. It's been a trip. I do have some stories to tell you that were quite entertaining. And then we're going to bring out our guest, who I'm so excited about. So I got up at 2:30 in the morning because I did the morning show here in Dayton. So to leave at 2:30 in the morning, then I flew to DC, then I flew to Dayton, and then went right to right to the morning show. The conference starts. There's an opening session tonight. I believe it's Anna Quinlan is the opening general session tonight. So that's going to be amazing. And then tomorrow there's sessions. I think there's 6 breakout sessions in total. Maybe there's 4 with 6 options each. There's a lot. So it's different. Oh, it's different sessions. You can watch them whenever. Seems like it'll be awesome. Okay. So yeah, so Missy knows more than I do. But if you're looking for something fun and different and to be inspired and to just hear about whether it's funny ways to move through life, Irma Bombeck was prolific when she was writing. And she was one of the first women to talk about all things motherhood and make it really funny. And she was, I'm sure Betsy knows more than I do, but like 900 was it? It was essays, newspapers, syndicated. So she's going to tell you the whole story, but it's amazing. So yeah, Irma Bombeck is one of the greatest humor writers. You should get one of her books. Let me show you something. I'm going to show Betsy this too. But when I started doing stand up, I was probably 2002 when I started. And I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but I was like, where does one start? And so one of the very first books I got was Irma Bombeck. And I started reading Irma Bombeck. I read Joan Rivers had a book as well. And who am I thinking of? she always wore a muumuu. Phyllis Diller has a book, something with a lampshade on her head. I read everybody's book. I'm going to just have Betsy follow me around and fill in all my answers today because she's already amazing. so my mother loved her. I have one of her old books. I'll have to dig it out. It's hilarious. I read her books as a teenager and I loved them all. She was the best. Loved Irma. She lived in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm just going to bring Betsy on because now I'm just looking at her. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to our show, probably the most famous person that we've ever had on the show. Betsy Bombeck, everybody.
I'm sorry if I'm the most
Betsy,
famous.
Betsy, you are. We're so excited, Betsy. That's how I feel. People are like, you're so famous. I'm like, not really, just to my mom. Somebody said, I have her whole collection.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
so
that's a lot.
This is Betsy Bombeck. You are the oldest of the three, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Irma had 3 children. Betsy is the oldest. And she is here representing during the conference. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself. For those people that might not know your mom mm-hmm. and those people who love your mom.
Okay. Well, for me, I love coming to this conference. I've been coming since it began. I think it's like 28 years. I only missed 1 year because I had kidney stones.
So, you know, and I are kidney stone sisters. I have to get a lithotripsy in 2 weeks.
Oh, God.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
I hate that for you.
Me too.
That's
me too.
But so I've been coming to the conference since its inception. We thought we were just doing it to honor my mom. You know, the first time, I think it was like 2 years after her death, we brought all of her friends. And we did this thing, and it was so successful, everybody loved it, that we said, okay, we'll keep doing it. And I didn't think I'd still be doing it 28 years later.
That's amazing.
But it's just a really, really, really special conference. The people here, I enjoy coming back and seeing people over the years. The presenters are wonderful. The keynoters are wonderful. I've heard so much stuff, and there's just a lot of laughter. You know, and we've seen people through all kinds of stuff. You know, I still think about Cabin Girl, who sat in front of the whole audience and asked, I want to write, and I write for Cabin Life magazine. She goes, I really don't know what I should write about. And Bruce Cameron, who was one of the presenters, kind of had a brief pause and goes, cabins? And the whole audience just started laughing. And so our cabin ended up getting in her thing because she goes, do you have a cabin? Like basically going around the whole
conference. You got a cabin? I'm going to write about it.
I'm
going to
write
cabin?
About your cabin. So, you know, so just funny. Some funny things happen here. Some really wonderful things happen here. You know, I enjoy being here. In my regular life, I do way too much. I'm a trauma therapist and social worker. I own my own construction company, and I teach at the Arizona State University. I teach in the School of Social Work.
All right, you just unpacked a lot of stuff, Betsy. I'd like to go back to construction company.
Yeah.
Because that one tends to stick out. What are you building?
What am I building?
Yes.
Right now, we're currently working on a whole house reconstruction. We've started with the bathrooms. But we'll this summer be tearing their roof off. They're finding a place to live because they thought they were going to live in their house.
You'll never live in your house.
People always say that we could live in our house while you're working on it.
No,
I'm like, yeah, you want my guys in there at 7 a.m, you know?
How did you? So you're a trauma therapist mm-hmm. and you're a teacher at Arizona State. How does one find oneself? You know what? I think I'm going to rip this roof off. You should pay me. How do you land there?
I did my own house, and the people were so awful. I took over as the general, and I got the people to work for me. I've worked with the same people for over 25 years, and I went and got my contracting license, and I have a really great business partner who's back there doing the work well.
I love it. Yeah. It's so funny because I'm like you, like all my house. Well, I don't know if you bought crappy houses, but I could only afford crappy houses. And so I've learned to GC stuff.
Yeah.
And so maybe I should get my license.
There you go. Now you have another
career. I could be the Jersey division of Betsy Bombeck Industries.
That's right. Could be.
I don't know much about roofs.
Oh,
but,
well, you know, find somebody. You get a good guy.
Could learn. That's so awesome. So would you consider yourself a writer in any way, like your mom?
No, not at all like my mom.
No?
I write well. I think that's the problem.
Yes, I know. You're like, now I have to think.
Good
you can't write good. You have to write well.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, think. Do this right. Mm-hmm. I write more, you know, trauma related stuff.
Not as funny.
Not as funny. Yeah, I'm considering. I'm working on a book about adoption. Somebody says that's a lot of shame and guilt, and I go, but I'll find something humorous.
Yeah, there's a nugget.
There's a nugget there. There's always something. There's always something. You know.
That's so awesome. So this starts 28 years ago. What did it look like its first year? Like, how many people would you say came that first year?
There was a lot. I don't know if I think they've kept it at the same amount of people.
I was going to say, I don't actually know. Like, do you know how many people attend this?
350
said the gang in the audience. And Kathy's in the audience with Sue. We both brought besties with us. In case there was a fight, then we'd have backup. That's how we travel. Kathy's my backup and Sue is Betsy's backup. I have so many questions. So I have been a comic for 21 years. I have three kids. I have the son and two daughters. You were the daughter and two sons, right? Do either of your brothers write?
Yes.
They do that?
Yeah, my brother has been a writer. He went to USC film school and he wrote film stuff for television until he got to be about 35 and he aged out in Hollywood.
Yeah. So you age out by 21 now.
I know. It's like really bad. But he still writes. And my other brother has written two horrible books that he self-published. Oh my God. He won't watch this. He won't.
Said like a true sibling. Oh, they were awful.
Well, it's called Traveler's Diarrhea. and his head is in the
toilet.
That's the cover.
Wow.
More Traveler's Diarrhea.
What is it about?
He's traveled the world. He's taught school.
And he's eaten the food and gotten diarrhea?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were doing that. No, he's just spouting out lots of information.
Sure. Yeah,
maybe. And some diarrhea.
You know, he ran into some doctors when he was in Peru one time. They go, oh, here, we'll give you some stuff. He goes, oh, great. I didn't know where to go. It's a horrible book. No, but, I mean, it's... I think his ex-girlfriends are probably going to sue him if they ever read it.
Really? Yeah. Now we're all like, I got to get this book. Somebody's like, look, somebody just wrote, somebody tag her brother. They'll be like, why am I tagged in this weird show?
This weekend.
That is so funny. That is so funny. Well, we were just talking the other day. My friend Missy, who is a comic as well, I'm hoping she comes to this with me next year. She is an only child. And we were, I said, do you even know how to fight? And she was like, what are you talking about? I said, if you don't have siblings, you've never been in a fist fight. Because I have two sisters. I was the middle. And we used to like straight beat each other up. And then everybody started putting in their stories of the torturous things that you had done to you as a child or you did to your siblings. And they're the funniest stories. Yeah. You're like, how did we survive? It was the 70s. Your parents were like, just don't kill each other. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll just punch her in the face then.
Yeah.
So funny. So what is it like? So I wanted to ask this because so I have my three kids. I started doing stand-up after I had my second baby. And my kids have always been, we'll say, the target of my jokes and have had their life kind of put all over the internet and videos. And I think it's quite a very unique upbringing, to have your dirty laundry put out, but in a funny way, sometimes funny, sometimes just, I hate you all, get away from me. But what was that like for you growing up? Cause your mom was talking about your life and your family. What was that like when you were younger?
We pretended we didn't know what she was writing.
We're like,
we acted like we didn't read it. My brothers, I think, really didn't read it. I always read the books just to make sure it's what she might have said about me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she called me the disaster lady. I mean, that, you know, I was, you know, always worried about something. I don't imagine that for myself. But so, yeah, it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
People felt like they knew. I have people come up to me and go, I know your sister. And I go, I don't have a sister. No, I really know her. I read about her. And I'm like, maybe it was the fake kid she wrote.
Yeah.
About. She would write, right. We had a fake kid sometimes she would write about. She'd had a kid.
You're kidding.
Yeah, Timmy.
She's like, this is the son I always wanted. You're like, we have to.
We have to, but now we have Timmy. And we could blame that everything on each other. You know, and if they says, you know, it was really bad being the daughter because it was always, if she said my daughter, then everybody knew.
Yeah,
my daughter.
Yeah.
If it's my son, it could be either of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. You get used to it. People ask me, I've had celebrities who have kids that they talk about ask me that. And I go, you'll get them a therapist.
Yeah. She'll be in therapy. Don't worry
they'll
about
be
it.
Fine.
They'll take care of it. With a copay, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But it is the same. And so it's the same. So I have a son and two daughters. And I do, if it's a particularly embarrassing story, then I'll just say my daughter.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, it's 50-50 shot. Which one of you is a complete nut job? So I think it's fair. But then the one who it's not is like, but I didn't do that. I go, but nobody knows. She's like, but now they think it. I go, well, it doesn't matter. Nobody can point a finger. It's fine.
That's fine.
It's fine.
Don't worry about it.
But it's funny. So my son, which, you know, talk about a lot. They're on the shows with me and stuff. He was at college. He had just gone to Montclair State. And he was on campus walking around and they have like the tours for the colleges, you know, so there was a group of kids walking around campus. He said he had his backpack on. He's walking to class and somebody in the tour was like, Dean, Dean, started waving. And he was like, hello. And then they ran out of the group, came over, gave him a hug. They're like, oh my gosh, we weren't sure if we were going to see. It was like he was part of the tour.
Oh.
And he was like, I'm sorry, do I know you? She goes, we watch you every morning with your mom. And it was so funny. And he was like, but they know so much about him. Like you're saying, they feel like they know him because they've seen him a million times or they've read about him or seen him.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all know Dee needs to brush his teeth and get new underwear. See, there you go.
That poor guy.
Yeah. No, he's gross. He's straight gross. So it's on point. It's accurate. That's for sure.
He's gross.
He's gross. But adorable. He's awesome. And that's what I think was so great about your mom's writing is that, you know, not only was she writing during a time that nobody was talking about motherhood, but she was talking about the things that are annoying to everybody. But there's such love that comes through your mom's writing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, last night when I was doing the Writers Awards, I was talking about how she is still relevant.
Yeah.
Which is
Amazing.
Yes. You know, she's been gone 28 years now, I think. And that I picked up a book and I go, okay, Michael Jackson and Madonna are a little dated. But for the most part, what she was talking about was the things that happen in everybody's home.
Yeah.
The same stuff still happens.
Yeah.
You know, kids are still annoying. And, you know, and siblings fight and, you know, people learn to drive cars and you go on vacations and all that stuff, and it's still happening.
Yeah.
So it's still very current. And you know, she loved what she did. She loved us, and it showed through the writing.
That's awesome. And the story of, because your mom was syndicated in 900
yeah, a little newspapers. Over 900 newspapers.
And it was so interesting when I was reading about her, because it seemed like it took off fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that? Because I think, you know, there was no internet. There was none of the ways that we communicate now. So the newspaper was the biggest form of communication. So talk a little bit about that, because once she got syndicated, it just blew up.
It blew up really pretty quickly. She, I mean, for her, probably not. She had been in newspapering since she was in high school, working, you know, part-time, and had always been writing something. But she quit when I came along and stayed out for a little while. And when my youngest brother was going to kindergarten, she goes, I need to do something. And a local newspaper, which was like a weekly, said, we'll pay you $3 a week to write about the historical facts of Centerville, Ohio. And she said, after about two columns, she wrote something funny. And she would throw in funny stuff occasionally. And the local newspaper that she had written for, which was the Journal Herald or the Dayton Daily News, I can't remember what it had become by then, picked her up, and the editor there sent her columns to a New York syndicate. Like within about a year, she
so quick,
and she was on like Johnny Carson. Within a year of, she, they said, put together a book. She put together a collection of her columns, made a book, went on Johnny Carson. The newspapers just kept increasing, and she got up to eventually 900 newspapers.
It gives me goosebumps to think about it, because it was the first time that I think that somebody was really able to, you know, take these things that we all talk about on an everyday basis and put a funny spin on it, and to the level that she was. So I know I'm saying syndicated. I don't know if everybody knows, understands that. But the idea is that, you know, you start writing for this paper, like Betsy said, and they're like, wow, you know, we need to fill this space in our newspaper. We would love to. So they take the same article and then run it across the country. She was everybody's mom. Kathy said, who are we talking about? We're talking about Irma Bombeck, who was an amazing writer, talking about all things motherhood and family. And this is Betsy, her daughter, who is with us as part of the Irma Bombeck Writing Conference that is here in at the University of Dayton, where she graduated from. And they do this conference every 2 years and celebrate all things Irma. One of the things that I thought was so great is that there is a motto for this conference, and the motto for the conference and was kind of a byline for Irma was, you can write. Can you tell everybody about that a little bit?
Yeah. What happened is she went to school. She wanted to be a writer really bad, and she went to University of Ohio, and she went and got into the writing courses there, and she had a horrible time. They basically flunked her out and said, you're never going to be a writer. And so she came back to her hometown, which was Dayton, and came to the University of Dayton. And one of the writing instructors said, I'd like you to write something for the Exponent. I can't remember what the name of their magazine was. And she goes, oh, I don't think so. And she wrote this article. She slipped it under his door, and he came back and just wrote on it, you can write. And that's what set her off, and she realized that she could write. And the funny thing is, and I haven't told this too much, is that till almost the time of her death, she would occasionally get her columns with red circles from one of the instructors at the university.
And I go, they were still editing her?
Yeah, they just couldn't give it up.
That's, you know? So funny.
Yeah, that was. I always thought that was pretty good. She goes, oh my God, he's still sending me things.
That's so funny. She should write back and be like, I was on Johnny Carson last night. Send back.
You know, I was looking at we got a collection of everything that she was on, and I was looking. I go, she's like 40s, early 40s, and she's sitting on the show. And I mean, many people won't know, but like Buckminster Fuller and Dick Cavett, and I'm like going, and she's telling jokes, and they're getting them, and I'm like, I was nowhere near would have been able to do that in my early 40s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she was really pretty amazing what she could do.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So how about your dad? She talked about your dad. How did he feel about being written about in those stories?
I was telling my friend the other night when we did a long while back, a thing for PBS, and it was about her life. And I said how my dad was just such an amazing guy. Because most men wouldn't have wanted their wives making a lot more money than them, traveling around the country, not doing all their wife stuff. But he was really, really cool. And he's talked about the first time he drove her from Dayton to Cincinnati to give us talk. And he goes, and I looked in the room and it was like full of like 500 women. And he goes, and my wife got up there and they were all laughing and just... He goes, and standing up and giving her ovations, and he goes, my life is never going to be the same. And pretty much he was right. His life was never the same. But yeah, he was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's so great? I don't know if you saw the documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Did you happen to see it?
I've seen some stuff. I don't know if I saw the documentary.
So it's, I think there were two that were done. I think I saw both of them, but in one of them, or maybe it was I think it was the movie. It was the movie, because in the movie, mm-hmm. They talk about her going to law school and how she meets her husband, who was also a lawyer, and I think a judge as well. And, but they talked about, I mean, everybody knows Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her amazing right. accomplishments and everything she's done. But what was so interesting was really the story about how they met, because as she was doing these amazing things, she was having babies and a family. And it really talked about how supportive he was through that whole process. And you start to see, you know, I think you see it a lot more now that when you see women becoming really successful, you either have to have a man that is like, go and I have your back in every way, or super, you know, conflicted about it and really is not okay. And I think that I know a lot of my girlfriends where they had great careers, they were making great money, and they said it was really hard for them to date because guys were very intimidated by her. You know, she's like, I don't need any money from you. I don't need a house from you. I have my own stuff. Like, it just, it's a very funny thing. And I think you're starting to see more of kind of those equal relationships, but it's nice to hear that even then, like you said, your dad during a time that it would have been super weird for your mom to be so successful.
Yeah. He was, you know, Mr. Irma Bombeck, you know,
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Mr. Irma Bombeck.
Yeah. You know, you know, but he was good. He enjoyed it and he was really supportive, you know, so that's great.
So Vicky just wrote, one of the stories Ruth told was that she had worked so much in such long hours. Her husband came in one evening, scooped her up and carried her out of the office.
I don't think my dad ever did
He didn't do that. He wasn't that good.
He wasn't that good. He did the dishes every night.
That was as far as it was going to go. Donna said she paved the way for women to relate to and laugh about the hard parts of momhood. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Canada has Lynn Johnson. She's a great female cartoonist who portrays, like Irma, life in a growing family. I was going to say, that's the nice thing. You know what's so funny? I don't know if anybody else does this, but you ever watch like actors in certain movies and then they're like, and they're Canadian, and the Canadians will claim their people. Like, she's Canadian. They're ours.
Yeah.
I love it. Canadians like, they're ours. Like, did you watch Schitt's Creek?
Oh, yeah. I love that.
So good. All Canadians. They're like, that's ours. We did that. They're all us. I don't think there was one American actor in it. They were like, nope, we don't want any of you people ruining it. It was so good.
Canadians rule.
Canadians rule, yes. So many great Irma Bombeck quotes, I know. Is there a favorite quote or story that you loved that your mom wrote?
Well, I mean, I went to the archives when they opened a couple months ago. And I loved because she just would write stuff on napkins or whatever. And they have some of those over there. And they, the original thought for the quote that's often used is, you know, seize the day. Don't think of all the women who passed up the dessert cart on the Titanic. And on a napkin in there is this like dessert cart Titanic, use now. So that, wow. So I like that one. On my desk at work, I have a cup that I got somewhere here, I think, that says, if you can't make it better, you can laugh at it. And and I like to look at that when things are not going well. I go, yeah. Okay, I got to find the humor in this.
Now, do you have children, Betsy?
No, I do not.
I was going to say, how about your brothers?
My brothers. Both my brothers. My brother, Matt, has a daughter who is in Boston as a social worker. Mm. And my brother, Andy, has a son, Michael, who's 17. And they're pretty cool kids. So.
Do you think that they started to understand your mom a bit more once they had kids? And you said they didn't really read much of her book, right?
No, my brother, Andy, the guy who wrote
Diarrhea. The got
diarrhea
it.
Book. My mom said, you never read anything I write. And so he was a fifth grade teacher at the time. And they had a form for the book I read this summer. And he filled out the form. He picked one of her books. He read it. He filled out the form. What did you like best? What did you not like? And gave it to her in a frame for Christmas to set up. I read your book.
He only did it because he could get points for it for school. He was like, fine, I'll do it.
But it was the same thing he gave to his fifth grade students. Oh, he was like 35 when he gave it to him. So, yeah.
That's really funny. Do you know if the grandkids have read it? Any of her stuff?
Yes. Eva has read some. Michael, I don't think so. You know, he's a 17-year-old boy.
Yeah.
But he does know about her. Both of my niece and nephew were born after she was gone.
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't really know her. But what they do know her, we've shown her, you know, clips from television and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Eva's been to the conference. I think, I don't know if Michael's coming this year to the conference, but he's been to the conference since he was a little kid.
Wow.
So he knows a lot about her.
That's amazing.
And he's always surprised about, wow, people really knew her. It's like, it's hard to imagine when you're born so long after somebody's here.
Now, are there any people today that when you read their work, or maybe even as comedians, that feel reminiscent to your mom and how she wrote? Like, do you think that, I know that she has she's influenced my stand-up. I'm sure she's influenced so many other comedic writers. Is there anybody for you that when you read it, you're like, this seems like so much like my mom?
You know, it's, I read a lot, and I just got something somebody sent to me that she's writing letters to Irma. And I read the first two. I have to get back to her while I'm here at the conference. But I go, she really, and I can't remember her name, so that's horrible. But could have said
we won't tag her either.
Yeah, don't tag her because we can't remember. But I like, you know, when I read Tina Fey's book, I thought,
yeah,
there's a lot of people that do really good stuff. Mostly I like, you know, because I do trauma therapy, I listen to comedy all the time. I stream it. I had an hour drive to work and an hour drive back for a while. And so I would listen to comedy all the time. And, I think Jim Gaffigan, because he does
Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, because he does family stuff. And he just makes me laugh.
Yes.
Maria Bamford, I like her.
Love Maria Bamford.
You know, because I like her because she also, I use her in my classes because she does stuff on OCD.
Oh.
And it's really funny, you know. So those are people that come to mind right offhand.
Have you found Nate Bergatze yet?
Yes, I'm going to him.
Are you?
Yeah, I bought
so
a suite
funny.
At the arena to take all my friends
you
to
did?
Go.
You did? How about Leanne Morgan?
Oh, yeah.
Love her.
I'm April 13th. I'm going to have a suite of my friends watching Nate.
Now I wish I was one of your friends. Oh, Betsy, we're almost friends. Is Sue going?
No, because it's in Phoenix.
Sue, I'll pick you up and we'll head out.
Head out.
Sue's like, let's do it. Let's road trip. Yeah. So a couple people are mentioning, and they said that he reminds you and his mom reminds them of your mom. Do you follow Mike Rowe?
Oh, yes. Yes. And he's been here at the conference before.
Has he?
Yes.
That's so funny that somebody'd say that. Him and his mom.
Yeah.
Adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. So I am here because I've been wanting to come. But so in the, just to bring Betsy up to date. So in the last 2 years, I was married for 24 years, went through a divorce. My dad passed. My kids all grew up, went to college, hit menopause, turned 50. Yeah. So horrible. Good times. A lot of drinking. And so I'm writing a book about it, trying to find the funny in that. You shouldn't read it. I'm going to have a list of people who are not allowed to read it. It says vagina a lot.
Oh.
Your mom, has your mom ever written a book with the word vagina in it?
No.
Yeah. So.
I mean, it was, she wrote a play that was never published with my brother because she said, you need to write the sex scenes. Or the intimate scenes. I'm sure she probably didn't even say
that. She probably didn't even say that. That's so funny.
So no, she would, yeah. I mean, she found, when I turned her on to Bette Midler, I thought she was going to lose it at first. And they became friends. So
yeah. She was friends with Bette Midler.
And she was friends with Phyllis Diller. And you'll see a picture of her and Phyllis went shopping. And when Phyllis would go shopping, she didn't want anybody to know her in Beverly Hills. So she'd dress up in a nun's costume.
Your mom's life sounds awesome.
And then they ran into Johnny Carson, and he didn't recognize Phyllis. And he goes, oh, sister. And my mom's like, Johnny, Jesus, it's Phyllis. And so, yeah, there will be a picture. They usually show it of Phyllis and
what a fun life your mom had.
Oh, yeah. She did have fun. Life.
I do feel like even though I'm dirty, your mom would think I was funny. She might be like this. She'd be like, all right. Okay, all right. That was funny.
Well, I have to think that over time she would have grown up.
Yeah. She would have grown up a bit. Grow up, Irma.
Yeah. She was very, very clean.
She was very clean.
Very clean.
But I think that As me being a writer, I've never considered myself a writer. Mm-hmm. As a stand-up, I've always I've always written on stage. Like I'm much more oral. Like I have to hear how things sound. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you start as a comic, you tend to write dirty, right? Because it's easy. It's an easy joke. But 21 years later, hopefully you've learned to be clever. And so I write much cleaner now. But you know, when you're through a divorce, there's a lot of vagina talk. I don't know if you know, there's just like, listen, we got to clean it out. There's a lot of stuff. We're going to use it again. So, it's just that I don't want you to think all my jokes end in vagina. They don't. A lot do. But, I'd like to believe your mom would be like, this is such a dumb story. But I'm
good.
Tell
I like
you.
Dumb stories.
So years ago, I don't think I've ever told this story. Years ago, the very first website that I had, I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't have any credits. You know, it wasn't like I had a list of places you can see me perform because it was mostly my kitchen. And so there wasn't a lot to put on the website. So I remember I had two quotes at the top that I made up. One was from Abraham Lincoln, and it was just like, she's awesome. My family loves going to see Dina or something. Another quote, we're religious. I don't know if you're picking that up from me, but I got a quote from Mother Teresa. And I was like, you know, she's some quote like, she's amazing. I would watch her every day or something, right? Whatever. So I put it up and I send it to my mom. I say, hey, I think this is it. I'm going to launch the website. She's like, yeah, I have a problem with what you've put together. And I go, what? You don't like the colors? You don't like this? She goes, Dina. Those quotes, I don't think they're real. I go, they're not. Number one, okay, I made them up. So I'm going to leave them there. And she goes, well, I mean, I think it's fine, the Abraham Lincoln one, but you're going to have to take the one about Mother Teresa down. I said, why? She goes, because you said she's amazing. Mother Teresa would not say that. So I respond and I said, I don't know. I feel like if I ever had Mother Teresa at a show, even though she's Jesus-y, at the end, she'd be like, it was the thing. And she's like, I don't think so. She wouldn't say that. Take it down. I go, she absolutely would. I got into a huge fight with my mom. I was like, if I met Mother Teresa, not only would she say, you're amazing. She'd be like, you should go to maybe confession, but I'm going to bring some other nuns to the next show. She's like, she would never say it. We had a fight, a full fight about Mother Teresa and whether or not she'd enjoy my show.
That's good. I have a Mother Teresa story.
Tell me your Mother Teresa story.
It's not really Mother Teresa.
Yet, yeah, none of
but
these are.
I went to a colonoscopy and look at this. It's okay. See, they had a blanket, a thing like this.
Okay.
And they had given me the medicine and I was a little high.
Oh, because it looks like her, yeah, her habit.
And I, my it friend does. Was there and I said, would you please put that around my head and take a picture? And the nurses got real mad because they said, don't get that IV out. And I go, please don't, because it's making me happy. And I've used that picture. Occasionally people go, what is that? And I go, that's my Mother Teresa photo on Instagram.
Yeah.
So, that's yeah. Awesome. So if you ever see that, you can do your own Mother Teresa.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never thought about it. Well, yeah. I have one for you.
And it's amazing that they have this.
Yeah, it is.
They have the Mother Teresa tablecloth.
Yeah, here. Yeah. So now I have we're going to just do funny stories about procedures. So I don't know if you've had this experience, but I went for, it must have been during the pandemic, right? Yeah. So everybody's mammogram was off, right? Because nobody went anywhere.
Yeah.
So it had been a while since I had had a mammogram. They all know this story, but I go. And, you know, they give you the paper gown.
Yeah.
Well, anytime somebody gives you a paper gown, I don't know, you always get into, you're like, it's time to get naked. Let me go take more clothes off. So I take my clothes off. I have my gown on. I'm waiting for the lady to come out. She goes, ma'am, you can come back in. So I come in and I start to, you know, stick the boob on the plate. And then I open the gown and she goes, ma'am, why don't you have pants on? I said, what? She goes, why don't you have pants on? I go, well, you gave me the gown. She goes, ma'am, this is a mammogram. I said, oh, I'm sorry. Do you need me to have pants on? She goes, normally people have pants on for a mammogram. And I go, oh, let's just do it. She goes, I'd really like for you to put pants on. And I was like, oh, all of a sudden you can't do a mammogram because I don't have pants on. But for whatever reason, so now every time I go, I have to say to myself, keep your pants on, because they don't like it when you don't have pants during a mammogram.
Oh,
so just a side note. So
that's a good one. I like
that. Yeah. So, but I do. I have to really think about it. But you should try it. Just take all your clothes off next time you go. Yeah. It upsets a lot of people. So that's just a fun fact.
I'm just thinking of where I go walking down the hallway without my pants on. All the women in the waiting room going,
yeah,
we're here for mammograms. What's going on with
that's her? A mammogram place? It is. You take clothes off. So they have shirt gowns now. See, they should have given me a shirt gown. That would have made it easier. But if you give me a full ball gown, then pants are coming off. It's a sans pants mammogram. Yeah, her begging me to put my pants back on would have given me a complex. That's what I said. I go, this is new underwear. Okay, whatever. We are big fans of new underwear.
Oh,
I'm going to tell you why. She's like, I didn't ask. I'm going to tell her anyway. So I was going through my divorce and my girlfriend does what I can only refer to as a pretty woman montage of new clothes. She was like, if you're going to start dating, you're going to need better clothes. Yeah. And I was like, fair. So we go, we do the clothes, whatever. And she's in the dressing room with me. And she was like, what are we doing with your underwear? And I go, oh, it's fine. And she was like, that's marital underwear. And you're going to need single underwear. And I was like, no, it's fine. She's like, we're getting new underwear. And I don't remember the last time that I was like, you know what? I'm going to step up my underwear. So I went out, I got all new underwears, and it's always plural.
Yeah.
And, and it's been great. So I keep telling people, whether you're married or single, wherever you are, is go get yourself some new underwears. It's important. Sue, listen to what I'm saying. For our trip, I want new underwears when we head to Phoenix because it's going to be nice. So you're officially a part of our group now.
Okay.
So it's the top tier is new underwears.
Top tier, new
top
underwear.
Top tier, important.
I'll go home and get new underwear.
New underwears. Okay. Do you like bourbon?
No. I'm dangerous on bourbon.
You like bourbon now. That's also part of the group. You like bourbon and new underwear. So, yeah. Okay. We don't inspect the underwear. It's all just based on your own self-report.
There you go.
But, yeah. And they can't come in a bundle. So the other day, I said, new underwear. So they're like, I'm going to order a 5-pack. I was like, no 5-packs.
No,
you have to go and you have to root through the underwear in the specialty stores like everybody else that has good underwear on.
Yeah.
Because I used to do bundled underwear.
Yeah, I've done not in a long time.
Yeah. It's got to be.
It's got to be from
singles. Okay. So I didn't realize I had to say it. But yeah, it needed
a Hanes 5-pack isn't going to cut it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That is not part of the single montage of that's marital. It's basically marital underwear in a pack. Yeah. Keep it in mind. Yeah. The ones that come in 8+2 free. No, no. If it comes with 2 free, don't buy that underwear. Mine came in a 12-pack. Throw them away. Yeah. That's a lot of underwear. Mm-hmm. So funny. We have a lot of weird conversations here, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I looked at it. I looked at it.
Wait, I have a story for you.
Okay, good. I like stories.
So, Adam, you guys didn't hear this yet. So, so yesterday, got up super early, driving, fine. I get in an Uber. I love Ubers, right? They're always interesting conversations. I get Sheila. Sheila's real fun. She picked me up when I was on Good Morning Dayton yesterday. She picked me up. She goes, you're up early. I said, I've been up since 2:30. We start talking. And she goes, well, it's a special week. It's my anniversary. And I said, oh, she goes, yeah, it's my 3rd anniversary. Oh. I said, oh, you've been married for 3 years. She goes, 3 weeks.
Oh,
I said, 3 weeks. Oh, that's exciting. And she was an older lady. And I was like, that's so exciting. You just got married. Yeah, 3 weeks ago. She goes, and he's a lot younger than me. I said, my sister, she always dating the guys, usually like 12 to 15 years younger than her. Yeah, she's a hottie. So she goes, oh, no, he's a lot younger than me. And I said, oh, well, how much younger is he than you? She goes, well, I'm 59 and he's 27. And I've known him for 20 years. And I was, so now I'm in the back of the Uber going, wait.
What's happening? Yeah. Dayton?
And I go, we have approximately 15 minutes for you to unload this story because I'm not getting out of this Uber until you unpack what you just said. So she says, okay. She said, so in the, I'm like, you're 59, he's 27. You got married 3 weeks ago, but you've known each other for 4 years. Sit on those numbers for a second. And you've known him for 20. Mm. Boom. So here's what she says. She used to be the secretary at the school. And she remembers him as a kid. She wasn't looking at him then. But she remembers him growing up. Fine. Then she gets transferred to the high school, obviously. And she sees him there. Fine. Nothing. They have nothing. Nothing. She was like, Dina, I'm not. I was doing my life. Whatever. She got the kids, divorce, whatever. Fine. She says, a couple years ago, I'm in my motorcycle gang, obviously. And they're at, we'll say, a rest stop. And so she hops off of her bike and she runs into him and his family. How you doing? Good to see you. Good to see you. We should grab dinner sometime, he says, at 23 to Sheila. And Sheila's like, no, we shouldn't. But he keeps calling. And And I said, okay, let's just, I said, Sheila, Sheila, I had a lot of questions. I said, so you just got married. Yeah. But we were dating for 3 years and blah, blah, blah. And I said, how does his family feel about you? And she said, oh, they love me. I'm older than them. And I go, yeah, I figured you're older than everybody that he knows or he graduated with for sure. And I said, how does your family feel? She goes, well, they're less okay with it. But she was so he called 6 times while we were in the car. She was like, Dina, he's so sweet. He sent me a note. I miss you already. Like it just don't.
Creepy.
Right. That's but a, you know, what's the one, the girl McPhee, Catherine McPhee, and her husband
that's right.
is significantly older.
David Foster.
Yeah.
But always okay.
That's always okay. And you know, and they, it's by all accounts, they seemingly have a beautiful relationship. It's weird when she says the part, and I've known him for 20 years, that part gets real uncomfortable. But yeah, side eye Sheila. Yeah. But she was the nicest the happiest lady I've had an Uber with.
27-year-old.
Yeah. Harrison Ford and Callista. Oh, yeah. Flockhart. They have a very big age. But again, why? How old is Cher's?
She just.
Yeah, 32.
Yeah.
She's got like 40.
She's 80. Years
on her, she's 80 and he's 32? But she's Cher.
Yeah,
she's Sheila's Cher. Like, I'm Sheila. Yeah, she definitely has good underwear. Oh, I'm going to tell you right now, Cher's not buying a 12-pack, okay? I don't know who needs to hear that, okay? I'm looking at you, Shakendra, okay? But Cher is not buying a 12-pack of underwear. So think about it. Do you want a 32-year-old boyfriend or a 70-year-old boyfriend?
Yeah.
Shakendra's like, I don't know. How much money does he have? Okay, I don't know. Cher is 77.
Oh, 77, okay.
Still good underwear, though. Or no underwear. I bet she's not wearing her pants into a mammogram. She's like, why would I wear? Okay, you're right, Cher.
I'm Cher.
Nobody would even question Cher. But a lady from Jersey, all of a sudden, you're not allowed to wear pants. Or you have to put pants on when your place is in public.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cher's not even wearing underwear. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gave her 3 years. She won't like me anymore. She'll take me off her.
Who's that?
Cher. I said she was 80.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's don't tag Cher in this. There's a lot of people you shouldn't tag.
Yeah.
All right, here's Melanie. One of my favorite articles, when Irma was asked if you would do things differently in life, she said, I would have never have insisted the car windows be rolled up on a summer day because my hair had just been teased. And I would have sat cross-legged on the lawn with my children, never worried about grass stains. I tried to heed this raising my kids. I loved Irma. Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, that's a great article. I think that came like close to the end of her life. Mm. It was like one of the last things that she wrote about if she had her life to live over.
Wow.
Yeah, the things she would do.
Wow. There's another Sheila. She said, I'm on the Sheila bus. Sheila, how old's your honey? Do you know what a honey door is?
No,
let me tell you. So I have a shore house down in the Jersey Shore, and my mom was going to have, she says, I want to go down a couple days with my girlfriends. And I said, okay, sure. So I set her all up and, you know, everybody brings food. They have a nice time. They dance around, they make vegetables. I don't know. She's 76. Fine. So we're talking one day. And she was online, but either way we're talking and I hear a man's voice. And I said, is that a man that I hear in the background? She's like, because she said, John, just come on in. I go, who's John? Oh, Joanne. I said, no, you said John. And I heard a man's voice. Oh, no, there's no men here. I said, are you having a party? So I said, she goes, no, nobody's here. Well, I have a Ring doorbell. So I pull up my app. And I'm like, I'm going to find out if she's bringing honeys in. And there's no men come through the front door on the Ring doorbell in like 24 hours. And I'm thinking, that's weird. I know I heard a man. And then I remember I don't have a Ring doorbell on my back door. I'm like, are you bringing honeys in the back door? It's called a honey door. That's when there's no camera and you can bring as many men as you want in through the back door because nobody's monitoring. So it's called a honey door when you are sneaking men into your house.
So your mom was sneaking
she
men
has
into
a honey door that she's bringing the honeys in.
So they're dancing around making vegetables.
Making vegetables.
Guys in the back door. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. The shore is the beach. So, so funny. So, yeah, you'll have to get yourself a honey door, new underwears, and a bottle of bourbon. And then you are in, Betsy. I'm just going to be honest. You're already in. You're already in, whether you do that or not. Yeah, Sarah Paulson and Holland Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Age gap as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Holland Taylor, she's been in so many things, but I loved her in Bosom Buddies. Do you remember her?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Bosom Buddies was such a great show.
That was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
A fun show. Tom Hanks, right?
Tom Hanks, yeah. Yeah. And Peter Scolari.
Scolari, I think.
He disappeared.
Yeah, he did. Tom Hanks collects typewriters.
I've heard that.
American authors. And my sister-in-law was doing some sound in a studio in L.A., and she ran into him. And she says, is it true you collect typewriters? And he said, yes. And she goes, would you like Irma Bombeck's? And he said, yes. And so sitting on the day before I came here, I had them bring the typewriter from the warehouse, my warehouse, and put it on the table. And when I go back, I am sending it to Tom Hanks to have in his collection.
You should have put it in the Smithsonian.
There's one here at the university, and there's one at the museum here. You should have put it in the Smithsonian. Maybe Tom will put it in the Smithsonian.
Maybe
one,
he will.
All the ones he has.
That's. Do you remember your mom kind of typing away?
Oh, she was fast. She's like, and instead of, you know, because they had what that erasable tape, she would just X out. She would just X out, and then she had a great secretary, Norma Born, who's been here at these events, and she would retype everything for her. But she was
I can't imagine writing a book on a typewriter now that you're saying all that, because I'm constantly moving things around. And
when I tried to get her a computer, I was working in computer sales at the time in the early days, and I got her one, and she goes, she was like so confused. She's like, where does the paper guy go? It comes out over in this printer. And she goes, this thing isn't funny. And she went back to her typewriter. And I said, okay, I tried.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of exciting news that just happened.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I wonder what he does. Like, does he have like a gigantic?
I wonder who else's typewriter he has.
I don't know. My brother's.
Your mom's has to be the most famous.
No, he probably. I was thinking maybe like Mark Twain or. I don't know. Somebody, wow. I'm wondering if he has like old.
I wonder if eventually somebody's going to be like who's like Anna Quindlen will be here tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, can I have your old computer? Can I have your MacBook Pro? Like nobody's going to collect those.
Yeah.
They don't look cool like an old typewriter would. Yeah. Nobody's going to do that.
So it's like she's probably the end.
Yeah.
The people who use typewriters.
You're probably right. Nobody's going to be like, can I have your mouse pad? No. Yeah, that is so funny. Yeah. It says, don't remember that Stephen King movie with the poor guy with the typewriter. Yeah, it's so funny.
Stephen King, my mom and he were good friends. She would do a, for the National Kidney Foundation, she said, I don't want to go to any of those women's fashion shows one more time in my life. Mm-hmm. So she goes, I have friends who write and they can talk. And she would invite them. And the year that she invited Stephen King, he told her that the stuff he writes, she goes, you're too scary. And he goes, the stuff that I don't put in books is even scarier. He goes, I scare myself.
Wow.
But he spoke the year that Raquel Welch was going to be a speaker. She had written a book. And so my mom goes, is there anything that I can do for you, Steve? Well, he goes, yes, a slow dance with Raquel.
How can you pay me? I don't know. Is Raquel going to be there?
Yeah, is she going to be there? I mean, it's still an event that we carry on.
Wow.
And she brought.
Because that's what she passed away, right? Was it polycystic?
Polycystic kidney disease, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I still am on their board, and,
wow.
and we still do. And she, you know, she has an organ. We have an organ donor awareness project in her name and such. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, but yeah, she.
It's amazing the people that you're. I had no idea that she would have been friends with Stephen King or like the people that you're saying Phyllis Diller hanging. I mean, it's just, it's amazing because when I think of Irma. I think of your mom. I think of just a lady just sitting in her kitchen writing. But you start to see that, you know, we talk a lot about, I feel like a lot of women, people have to make a lot of decisions to take jobs to live and don't have the option to follow their passion or follow their dream. So when you hear stories like your mom, I think that they're great stories to tell and important stories for people to hear. But, you know, I think there's something amazing to be said about a mom who is just writing about things at her table and just taking small steps in whatever your passion is and just put it out there. Like, I remember when I started saying to my ex at the time, or now, but at the time years ago, like I knew I could tell stories, but I didn't know anything about stand up. So I had started doing stand up at a local club, And I wasn't making any money, and I would seat people, and in exchange for seating people and working at the club, right, I'd get to do 5 minutes of time. And he'd say, I don't know why you're doing this. Like, it's just, you're not making any money. Like, you're not going to go anywhere. Right. Like, what's the point of it? And I said, I don't know what the point is. I just know that I'm here with these kids all day. I was a stay-at-home mom at the time, and I loved it. But I just needed something else for me, something else for my soul, some way to express myself. And I just remember saying, I was like, you know, I don't know where this leads. But if I'm in front of people, if I'm around people, I can get feedback. But no one is ever going to be like, I heard you play in your kitchen the other night and you were awesome. Yeah. Like, I knew I had to put something into the universe. And for me, what I was capable of was taking the 5 minute drive down the street and telling stories on that stage. And so I think that there's something really important about wherever you are, is if you have some type of passion, is to be able to put it out in whatever form, wherever you are in your journey as an artist or whatever it is you're pursuing. Like, this conference I had wanted to come to for probably 10 years. And so now I'm here and super excited to be here. But there are, I'm sure, out of the 350 people here, there are lots of people. There are people that are just starting out. There are people that have been writing for a while, that are like people like myself, that I've never written a book before, but I write in terms of stand-up and comedy. So yeah, and now I do. I play my kitchen every morning, and actually you guys all found me. So it is kind of funny that comes full circle. And I do. I'm still late for work. I only work 10 steps from my bedroom, and I'm still late for work every day. So
I love it. I'm never on time.
Yeah.
I told somebody who wrote a story last night about funerals. I am known for being late, so I'm going to tell everybody my funeral's at 10, and then we're going to start it at 10:30.
Yeah.
I go just one last time that they can say,
yeah, what? They're like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, you know, and with my mom, things, I mean, you went from a $4 a week column to, you know, something slightly better at the Journal Herald to all these papers, and
it's
then
amazing.
She was on Good Morning America, and she did a sitcom, and she did all kinds of
stuff.
That's
amazing. It's such a great story. And I think that, like you're saying, 28 years since she's passed, and this is still going, people are still talking about, and she's still inspiring people. So I think it's great. And thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thanks for having me.
This was such a treat.
This was fun.
Just so lovely. If you'd like to get some more information about the Irma Bombeck Writing Conference, you can Google it, check it out. Maybe there's some still spots open for the online version. There was a writing contest as well. And there's ways that you can participate in future years. But I've just kind of been in my writing vein, whether it's the Story Summit program or this one. But whatever it is that you're looking to pursue, find somebody that's doing it, whether it's an art class or crafting or whatever, but just take that first step and do something for yourself. I know Judy from Saskatoon says always be nice to yourself. So hopefully you're feeling inspired today. Let's hear it for Betsy today.
Thank you guys.
Tag her brother, tag Cher, and tag bourbon and new underwear. And I think Betsy is officially in our group, whether she knows it or not, and Sue, and we'll see her at the concert. Sue and I all have our new underwear. We'll drive into Phoenix. So so thank you guys so much for joining us. And we'll be popping in. We'll be here tomorrow. I'm going to see if I can get Julie Cantrell for tomorrow morning if she's not too tired. But thanks as always. Like Judy from Saskatoon says, do something nice for yourself or others today. And thanks for joining us this early in the morning. And we'll see you tomorrow morning. Have a good day, everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Hey guys, if you enjoyed today's morning show, make sure to follow us for more One Funny Mother content.
Okay, alright. Morse code is tapping.
And check out onefunnymotherstore.com for great new inappropriate swag. And for more exclusive content, consider becoming a supporter.
She got a bad leg.
Thanks again, and we'll see you tomorrow on One Funny Morning.